Good morning, Jane. Thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure.
We did talk to you last time after your last trip from Egypt, and I did say that we'd have you back on the show to talk about the book, so I'm very excited to talk about it. Who are the accidental feminists of your latest title?
Well, they're basically the generation of women who are aged over 50 or 55 today. My generation, in fact, because I'm 61, tail-end baby boomers, and also, you know, absolutely mainstream baby boomers, probably predominantly, who are the women, well, they're a revolutionary generation in that they're the first generation of women ever in the history of the world who have mostly earned their own money for most of their lives. This is absolutely out of the box, brand spanking new. And I think there are some problems with being trailblazers whenever that happens, because women of my generation grew up expecting to live the kind of life that every woman practically who'd been born before them had lived, which is dependent financially particularly on a man and his pay packet or his financial worth. And we were the first generation who were told, no, you need to take care of yourselves. What we forgot in that was that we still expected women to take care of everybody else as well. And that's where the complications hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I guess your generation would be the same as my mother as well. But I think it's a good thing that for me, I find it extremely normal for women to be earning their own money and stuff as well. So it's definitely, I mean, your whole generation has definitely done an amazing thing for I guess, at least Western society. You say that the more misogynistic a culture, the more theocratic and the worse the fate of an old woman can be.
Yeah.
How does Australia compare to, say, the United States in terms of misogyny and theocratic tendencies?
Well, I think the Australian population, thank goodness, is not particularly theocratically, inspired. That doesn't seem to be something that interests Australians. We wear our religion, if we have one, fairly lightly. The Americans, on the other hand, are a quasi-theocracy, I think, these days. It's interesting because maybe its roots are in our origins. We were started by convicts who, you know, had their eye on the main chance, and weren't we lucky. The Americans were started by religious fanatics and rebels. And that strain of a kind of rigid religiosity has bedeviled the states ever since. And theocracies are absolutely appalling for women. Wherever you look at a theocratic state, you see women whose freedoms are restrained, whose living standards are poor, whose reproductive rights are nil, and who, you know, suffer really a lack of ability to fulfill their own lives in their own way. Ireland's the great kind of sparkling hope, though, because, you know, it was until really recently quite a theocratic country, and it seems to have thrown off the burden of theocracy with quite spectacular force and elan. And I have to say, Ireland really does give me hope. As they move forward, though, places like America seem to move backwards. What worries me in Australia is that a lot of the people in our parliaments, and particularly on the right of politics, seem to have fallen for the siren song of a kind of theocracy. I think we need to think carefully about the way we fund religious schools, for example, with public money, and where the way we still, in places like New South Wales, abortion is on the Crimes Act. And even this religious freedom review recently really smacked more of a kind of preferential treatment for religion rather than ensuring freedoms. And we also don't... the churches in Australia don't pay taxes. So, you know, we don't have a theocracy in Australia, but we have elements of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting. It feels like it's almost coming a little bit back through Scott Morrison, kind of, just because he's kind of bringing that, you know, his own Catholic beliefs into...
I think he's Pentecostal rather than Catholic, but yes, I take your point. And I think... it's quite interesting. I think as religion becomes less less sort of across the board, because I think the fastest growing religion in the census is no religion.
Mm.
It's interesting to see how, in fact, the old rivalries between Protestants and Catholics are going, and religious people are, in fact, you know, banding together a bit more, particularly if they're conservative. And their conservatism often expresses itself, oddly enough, around sexuality, women and gender, but also, of course, LGBTQI people and transgender as well, all seem to disproportionately upset the conservative religious.
Who really, in terms of things, don't really need to be upset anymore in the scheme of things.
Nothing to do with them.
Yeah, exactly. You cite some examples from people turning on popular women with unalloyed hatred as well. Hillary Clinton, for example, had an approval rating of 69% at the end of her term of Secretary of State under President Obama. And obviously, that definitely changed a couple of years after that. And in Australia, the former Young Australian of the Year, Sudanese-born Yasmin Abdul-Majid, seven-word tweet about Anzac Day resulted in over 200,000 mostly negative words written about her. How do you explain those levels of just hatred and vilification against women?
Well, I think there is a kind of so old and so ingrained, millennia-long probably, idea that women ought to be the second sex, that they are really a kind of service gender. They ought to take second place. What they should do is support others to rise to the top or to have influence or to exercise power. And there's almost an ingrained belief that any woman who seeks power for herself must be an evil woman, must be a bad woman, must be a selfish woman, whereas a woman who helps others achieve power is, we reward her, we like her, we think she's a good woman. So when Hillary Clinton was 2IC to a man, she was good Hillary, we liked her. The minute she said, no, actually, now I'd like to be president, she went back to being evil, nasty, wicked, horrible, shrill, strident, corrupt Hillary, you know, bad Hillary, lock her up.
Mm.
Julia Gillard experienced exactly the same thing when she was Deputy Prime Minister to Kevin Rudd. She was one of the most popular people in Australia as soon as she was Prime Minister, having done what so many men have done before her, which is, you know, be involved in a coup to topple her leader. Her sin was seen as much greater as any man's. And this is this expectation that women will always be the carers and the nurturers, that we will look after others, and that if we are seen not to do that, we get disproportionate condemnation. I think Yasmin Abdul-Majid's sin was threefold. She was female, she was young, and she was a person of colour. And I think, therefore, that was three strikes. You know, she has no right, in the sort of prejudiced view of the world, she has no right to take an authoritative stand. That feels uncomfortable to a lot of people who see authority as naturally resting. And this comes out of religion, of course, to return to our previous remarks. See authority as naturally coming from older white men.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how the hierarchies are working at the moment, and how some they're changing absolutely at the moment, and some are going down a lot harder than a lot of the other ones. According to the data you cite in the book, 45% of US millionaires are now women, and there are some estimates that by 2039, 2/3 of the wealth in US will be controlled by women. Can you see that kind of thing happening in Australia in a similar kind of timeline as well?
Yes, I can. And this is a sort of really interesting dichotomy, because what we're basically seeing is women of my generation experiencing two kinds of outcomes, both of them fairly extreme. There are a group of women who've done incredibly well out of the gender revolution. They've earned their own money, but also they stand to inherit one of the biggest transfers of wealth in human history in the next decade, and they stand to inherit because women still live longer than men. So they will inherit from their parents, but also from their husbands and sometimes from their brothers. So they've earned their own money and they're going to inherit, and a great many new businesses are started by women. I think the majority of new businesses are started by women, often because they can't find a way to make their caring responsibilities work around the corporate, sort of standard workplace. So they start their own new businesses. And, of course, inevitably, some of those become extremely successful, hence the number of women millionaires in the US. And the same things are happening here. This will make older women visible and a power for the first time. And in fact, we're seeing hints of it in the way that some cosmetic companies and skincare companies and various organisations are actually starting to show older women. There's more TV and film featuring older women in starring roles, rather than merely the butt of the joke or in the supporting cast. And this is all an indication that people have woken up and said, oh my goodness, these older women have got money. They're a market. And of course, for some older women, not only do they have money, but they also have time. Because if they had children, those children are grown and are, you know, no longer dependent on them 24/7 the way they used to be. And these women are saying, well, wacko, I've got money, I've got time. I'm going to do the things I want to do for the first time. That's why you see writers' festivals going off. That's why book clubs are so ubiquitous. That's why choirs and all those things, craft is taking off, bake off even. You know, these are things that women love to do, and now these women have money and they're becoming a market. That's great, but there's a corollary to that. Sorry, there's a helicopter going over my house.
I might just have to jump in, sorry, Jane, but we are going to get to the news in about 30 seconds, so
I just want to say, fastest growing group of the homeless is women over 55. So there's another bunch of women who've really missed out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible to see the progress that's undergone the last 50 years because of your generation. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning, Jane. And we'll definitely get you back in because I'm sure you're always undertaking new projects all the time. So thank you so much for coming in and talking about your book, Accidental Feminists.
My pleasure, James. Bye.